You get dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you've got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine and maybe, just maybe, a little bit more. Here are your hosts, Dr. Brian McCarty and big-time Mike McGivern on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host each and every week, Dr. Brian McCarty. Brian, how are you today?
I am doing great, Michael. How are you?
Good. Man, what a great fall day.
Yeah, we have a busy day today. Boy, we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Hey, you know what? If we can, let me start with this. We're also joined in studio by Jamie Somley, who is the Director of Digital Marketing for Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare. Jamie, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited about this, and we had to have you in today. Because we're going to start, we're giving our listeners a chance to ask questions throughout the shows that we do. And they need to go to Twitter, hashtag SportsMedRadio, SportsMedRadio, and they can tweet in a question for Dr. Brian or any of the guests that we have. And thank you for helping us with this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Does it amaze you how much I know about this?
I am amazed at how much you know. I think you know what I've taught you so far.
You know what?
Jamie
thank goodness
knows
you came in early.
Both Mike and I are Twitter experts. And we've been doing this for the last 5 minutes. So we are all over it.
When I asked her, how am I going to get these questions? I'm telling you, I've gotten that look from my wife a lot where she looks at me like, are you kidding? And so, Jamie, thank you so much for coming in. Again, if you want to ask Dr. Pennington or Dr. Brian McCarty a question today, You can tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we'll get your questions asked. Also, you can go on Facebook, and we have a question that Valerie had sent us on Facebook, and we'll get to that question later in the show. I want to thank Valerie for listening and asking the question that she asked. A lot of injuries going on, Dr. McCarty, so I just want to get into a couple of these because we could probably do the whole show.
Yeah.
We just want to spend the first couple of minutes. Eddie Lacy, let's start with the Packers if we can. Eddie Lacy, limited at practice with an ankle. I've got him on a fantasy football team.
He actually did practice limited yesterday. He's listed as questionable for Monday. I think the fact that he practiced is a good sign. But I know Dr. Pennington's here in studio with us. I think a lot of us saw a pretty good camera angle of him having what's called an inversion ankle injury, which is an ankle sprain. We were obviously concerned that perhaps he had fractured his ankle because he couldn't come back. But he and Devontae Adams both had ankle injuries in that game. Devontae was able to get back and play. He also was in limited practice again on Friday. And so what they'll be doing is they're trying to keep the swelling under control, and they'll be taping him up and trying to get them through some agility drills, which is what they did yesterday. And then I'm sure it does help that it's a little bit long week. You know, they have Monday night game right this week, so it gives them an extra day to try to recover. But it will lead us into a little segue about discussing ankle sprains.
Well, you know, and sometimes you hear people say, well, there are times it's better to break it than sprain it, because sprain it takes longer to come back, and you break it, and that's just a myth, or...
Well, I don't know if it's a myth. It depends on the degree of sprain. So the sprains on the lateral ankle come in really three main grades. The grade ones are the ones where you kind of tweak the ankle. We've all done that.
Right.
You kind of tweak it, and it hurts a lot for, you know, a very short time. Usually within a day or a week, it's all better. It feels fine. That means that the ligament was stretched slightly, but it didn't actually tear anything. A grade two injury, you tear part of the ligament, but some of it stays intact. It's called an intrasubstance tear, grade two injury. Usually these involve the three lateral ankle ligaments. There are three main ligaments on the outside, part of the ankle sticking down from the fibula bone. So if you feel the outside of your ankle, you feel that sort of bone sticking out to the side. Coming off of that, you can imagine three prongs like a fork spreading out. And the one in the front, called the anterior talofibular ligament, or ATFL, is the most commonly injured one.
Okay.
And then the calcaneofibular, or CFL, connects that to the heel bone. So when they get more severe, you tend to get more of these ligaments torn. The more that's torn, the more difficult the recovery. So getting back to your original question, Only if you have a grade 3 injury or beyond, where you can even have a separation between the bones, would it be better to crack or break the ankle. So the lower grades are quicker recovery, but a really, really severe ankle injury, you can tear the capsule, you tear the ligaments, and it does take a long time to recover. It can take 12 weeks or more, which is, in fact, longer than a break. But generally speaking, you're better off with the sprain.
Brian Bulaga is out at meniscus. Probably 2 more weeks, something like that.
At least, yeah. I talked to, well, Dr. Pennington can jump in here as well, because he was on television discussing this, I think, on Monday, right? And the, you know, the injury was reported, and we discussed it last week on this show as a medial collateral ligament sprain, which is what we were told it was.
Right.
In fact, he had a torn meniscus, which is part of the differential diagnosis. In other words, what other things can cause pain on the inside part of your knee? And he required arthroscopic surgery for that. I'm sure the MRI is what demonstrated that. And so now he's out for probably at least 4 weeks, I would suspect.
You figure 4 weeks, Dr. Pennington. It's good to see you, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree with Brian. Most likely it'd be about a 4 week injury in alignment. Sometimes they can get back quicker, but he's a big guy and an older guy, so it'll take a little bit.
A couple other guys that are out. Morgan Burnett dropped out of practice early. They're trying to get him back, I think, as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the calf injury, right? So he played pretty well last week.
Yeah,
boy, I tell you, having that guy in the game, I think, does make a big difference. And so I'm sure he felt maybe a little tightness. We don't really know why he dropped out, but it's never a good sign. You know, you'd like to see him in there the whole time. So.
Yeah.
Day to day on that, we're not really sure what happened to him.
You know, I was in North Carolina, so I only got to watch a little bit of that game. I was at some meetings, and so I didn't get a real good feel to watch the game. And it was interesting, because that's a game you want to just sit. And if you're not at the game, you want to sit in your living room and watch that game. And I couldn't do that, and that was that wasn't fun at all.
I'm
to be
sorry.
Honest with you. I mean, I texted my son Matthew middle of the third quarter. I said, "Where's Eddie Lacy?" And he said, "No, he's out. You're not going to be happy." So, some good news though for the team down south. For
yeah, good, really good news for Bears fans listening. Jay Cutler is out this week with a hamstring injury, so that gives you a pretty good shot.
Maybe they'll get a win. That's not nice. Drew Brees, a bruised RTC.
Yeah, rotator cuff. So this is the question I wanted to address to Dr. Pennington specifically. Dr. Pennington is a sports medicine specialist with us at Midwest Orthopedic Specialty Hospital, really an expert in sports medicine, but also specifically in shoulder injuries and shoulder repairs. So it's what we're going to be really talking about most of the day. But Dr. Pennington, what do you think about a bruised rotator cuff?
Yeah, Brian and I talked about that before this show, and I think it left both of us scratching our heads wondering what exactly a bruised rotator cuff is. And as we talked about with Brian Bulaga, these NFL teams are very vague in what they want to report as injuries. And certainly you can have a contusion of your rotator cuff or the bone that the rotator cuff attaches to, but usually in a guy who's been a thrower, who has a history of a labor repair, and again, he's getting to be kind of one of the elder statesmen in the NFL, I'd be much more suspicious that somewhere down the line we're going to be hearing about Drew Brees and his partial rotator cuff tear, if not a full rotator cuff tear. So I don't know, Brian, if you have any other thoughts, but I think a bruised rotator cuff in a guy who's over 30 and who's been throwing the ball for well over half of his life, that's an interesting diagnosis report, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bill. This, you know, those of us who do this sort of thing, when we hear those types of words, we sort of are skeptical, because it's such an odd thing to report. And it sounds a lot like what someone would say if they didn't want to say Drew Brees really has a bad shoulder injury.
Right, yeah.
And he's trying to sort of push through it, but... You remember when Brett Favre was injured with the Jets and they kept saying, oh, he has like, you know, a bruised rotator cuff or
right.
something similar. And he really had a biceps tendon tear and partial thickness rotator cuff tear, you know. So as Dr. Pennington said, it's just not the kind of thing we typically hear. So it'd be very interesting to see how that all shakes out.
Hey, one other thing for Wisconsin Badger fans. They played 7 o'clock tonight against Hawaii, and Corey Clement now, sports hernia, out 4 to 6 weeks surgery. My question would be, did they not know this a number of weeks ago? Did they think it would heal on its own and then decided it wasn't progressing and then had the surgery?
Well, you know, this is really, I think, kind of an interesting thing because we may diagnose this, but we don't actually surgically treat it. The general surgeons are the ones who actually treat these problems. And a sports hernia, according to our academy website, you know, they prefer the term athletic pubalgia, which sounds, I think, worse than sports hernia.
Yeah, it does to me, but
it sounds like something that should be contagious. But nonetheless, it's actually a problem where the abdominal muscles attach into the pelvis or the pubis bone. And so it's very painful. And, you know, we see this in athletes periodically. A lot of groin pain initially. It is treated typically initially with physical therapy and rest and anti-inflammatory and such, and often will get better without surgery. But once the tear actually occurs, they have a hard time recovering. So just to clarify, this is an issue where the tendon part of the abdominal muscles or the adductor muscles of the hip attach into the pubis bone. So it's actually a tear. And so once it's torn like that, it's hard for it to get better. And sometimes it requires surgery. So he clearly wasn't running like he did last year. And I think they've tried the rehab, they've done the anti-inflammatories and everything else. So just so that people know, you know, they'll do this. You can do it endoscopically with a scope or you can do it open. And I have no idea how they're going to do it because we don't do this.
Right.
But the listed recovery time on our academy website was more in the 8 to 12 week range rather than the 4 to 6 week range. So I don't know if they're being optimistic or they just know that the tear is smaller.
Well, one thing we do a lot of, Brian and I, is soft tissue surgery.
Okay.
And if you're repairing a soft tissue where it's attaching to the bone, expecting it to heal and be ready to take the vigors of somebody like Corey Clement in 4 to 6 weeks, in my opinion, is crazy. I mean, that you're setting yourself up for failure of that repair if you get back, if you're actually fixing a tear. Again, a lot of times we don't know exactly what's going on with these guys, but if you're doing a surgery where you're repairing that abdominal muscle back down to the pubis bone, there's no way a running back could be running in 4 weeks.
Yeah, it sounds like a red shirt to me, but
It really does. I agree with Dr. Pennington. If you're really suturing something back to the bone, normally it takes at minimum 12 weeks to be solid enough to take that kind of load. I read a little bit about this morning because, again, we don't do this. And one of the things they sometimes do is they actually cut one of the nerves that innervates this area. It's sensory only, and that can help with the symptoms. So, again, we don't know exactly what they're going to do, but 4 to 6 weeks seems optimistic.
And if that's what they're doing, if they're just desensitizing the area, he could come back as quickly as the wound heals. So, again, we don't know what's going on.
But if that's what they're doing, it'd surprise me if they said 4 weeks, because once the wound heals, then he's ready to go. And that wound wouldn't take 4 weeks, right?
Well, get him back into running and playing shape, it may.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
And you can now, with Jamie in studio with us, we're going to get to a quick break. But Jamie Somley, is she the director of digital marketing for Wheaton Franciscan, is helping us this week. And you can tweet us hashtag SportsMedRadio. I know we've gotten a couple tweets, correct?
We have.
Yeah. We'll answer those questions on the other side of the break. We've got Dr. Bill Pennington is in studio with us. We're going to talk a lot about shoulders. Got a number of questions for him, and we'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Can't stop addicted to the shindig. It's the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Can't Stop, brought to you by Dr. Bill Pennington in studio with us. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. You can tweet us at SportsMed Radio. We can answer. We may be able to answer some questions for you. And we've got a couple that we're going to start with right off the bat. Colin has asked. He is at Wisconsin Gunner. 34-year-old casual athlete. My big toe no longer lies flat. If you curl your index finger to palm, toe kind of looks like that. When to fix it. He also came back with toe doesn't hurt, but worried about later years in life.
Well, Brian and I aren't foot and ankle specialists. However, we see this all the time. We have a partner who's a great guy, Dan Gilstorf, works at Mosh, foot and ankle specialist. What he tells me when I ask him that about patients who come and see us is, if it doesn't hurt and you're not having skin breakdown problems, you treat it with shoe wear modification, wear a nice wide shoe, and everything's good. Once you start having skin issues or if the pain kicks in, that's when you fix it.
So there you go, Colin. Thank you. We also, Valerie had sent us a question via Facebook, Brian.
Yeah, she asked a question about bioinductive scaffoldings and specifically a specific product that she was curious about. So, Dr. Pennington, what are your thoughts on that for partial thickness rotator cuff tears?
Well, I think, Brian, you and I are well-versed in where orthobiologics are going. We both have used, whether it's scaffolding for restoration of cartilage or helping in tendon repairs. I personally, in a partial thickness rotator cuff tear, really don't see an application for something like that right now. Certainly, we are investigating these things. I use them more. If I use a scaffold, I use it for my really severe tears that have failed, and even that's of questionable validity at this time. I think that the jury's still out on any of these products for use in the shoulder, and we're certainly researching it, looking into it, but I certainly would not advocate using it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent question because I think the ideas are moving in this direction of can we induce a more rapid healing response? And so thank you for the question very much. It's something that we certainly will continue to be looking into.
Another question, TP at TPen 17, Romo, trade him or keep him?
Well, he's got a clavicle fracture, not in his throwing shoulder, but in his other shoulder. And as you know, sometimes he got it from hitting the ground, and he hits the ground sometimes without curling in a fetal position before he gets hit. And the one time he did that this year, he did break his clavicle. So,
you know, we have the head coach from Burlington High School coming in for the coaches show who stood up in Tony's wedding. So.
Well, he's trying to protect himself as much as he can with his back, and he has a broken clavicle. I don't think he's going to be around. If he is, it's really late season because that bone, as Brian alluded to earlier, it's going to take 6 weeks to minimally heal, 12 weeks to get sturdy. He gets driven down again, and that re-breaks and could be even more complicated.
From what I understand, he broke it once before. This is the same clavicle
right.
He broke before. So that's an unusual thing, and I think Bill's right. He was my backup QB. And I'm sure he seems like a really good guy, but he does play for the Cowboys, which is
right.
a problem. So,
correct.
But I already dropped him. He's not my backup anymore.
So
I'm sorry.
There you
sorry,
go.
Sorry, Tony.
So, you know what's great about, Jamie,
he's
about us?
At least 8 weeks.
About us being able to answer questions on a sports station like this, we can weave the whole Midwest Orthopedic into fantasy football, and that's awesome.
Well, fantasy football has become one of the most important parts of my life, even though I'm in a team with only six people, and they're all related to me. So, you know, if Tony's not available, he's gone. He's done.
He was your backup, and there's only six teams?
Yep.
We need to talk.
Aaron's my starter, so
okay,
he's not going
fine.
Anywhere except for the bye week.
You're fine. Again, you can tweet us at #SportsMedRadio, and we'll try to get to your questions. Let's talk a little bit. It kind of segues right into why you're in studio today, Dr. Pennington, as we talk a bit about shoulder instability and some of the differences between separation and dislocations. If we can kind of start to talk a little bit about that, what the differences are.
Sure. And we'll use football as an example because that's where we hear most of these things, especially shoulder separations. A shoulder separation refers to your collarbone where it connects to your shoulder blade. It's kind of the bump on top of your shoulder that you can feel. If you're a woman, it's kind of that bump that your purse strap kind of hooks onto. There are ligaments there that connect your clavicle to your collarbone, to your shoulder blade. There are ligaments that go between the two bones, both on top as well as deep within your shoulder. And if you have a strong impact to the ground, you can tear those ligaments. And probably many of you have seen people where your clavicle looks like it's sticking straight up in the air, away out of your shoulder. That's a shoulder separation. It's where those ligaments between the collarbone and the shoulder blade are torn.
Yeah, so essentially, the so-called shoulder separation, which I think, as Dr. Pennington has really well described, you know, is really an injury to the clavicle and what we call the AC joint, the joint between the shoulder blade and the acromion prominence of the shoulder blade on top and the clavicle. So it's a little bit different than a ball and socket separation. And so when you hear the term shoulder separation, that's typically what they're talking about is the AC joint, not the ball and socket part of the shoulder.
Right. The ball and socket is the glenohumeral joint. That's the ball of the humerus and the cup of the basically the scapula, the actual shoulder joint that you usually, you know, when you move your arm around, that's what you're using. When you dislocate your shoulder, that usually implies that that ball has dislocated or completely moved out from the cup of the shoulder. And with that, usually you tear some ligaments in your shoulder that are attached to something called the labrum, the cartilage in the shoulder. So you can pop it out. Usually it goes out to the front, but sometimes, especially in football, you can also dislocate it out the back if you get pushed out the back. And again, that's usually associated with a ligament tear or a cartilage tear. And if you're a young active person, a lot of times we have to fix those.
You know, Ann has tweeted that it's going to fit in perfect with what you're talking about. I believe my son dislocated his shoulder last night, football game. Will he be able to play again this year?
Well, it depends. It depends how the player and the parents want to approach the problem. Usually you have an injury. Usually it's to the labrum. Usually it's to a ligament that is attaching to the labrum. Sometimes it can be to the lining of the joint that attaches to the humerus. Bottom line is, if he's a young, active individual and he wants to return to his activities, if you dislocate your shoulder fully, you have to have it put back in, you usually have about an 80 to 90% chance of that happening over and over and over again. And with that, you can damage the joint. You can have more cartilage damage. You can have, even more importantly, bony damage that even makes it more of a problem and even lead to arthritis at a young age. So answer is, some people, you know, it's my senior year. Can I rehab it? Can I play in a sully? And can I try it? Well, if you're a linebacker or a lineman, it's probably not going to work. If you're a running back, maybe, but that's not without risk.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very thorough and excellent answer to this problem. The if it just happened, one of the key things that we would need, of course, is we would need to have an examination, because some people also have neurologic injury to their axillary nerve, which can cause weakness. And then you need an MRI to make sure that there's not a big bone fragment or something else. So there are a couple of steps that she would need to go through with her son before that decision could be rendered. But the question about when they can return, you know, really depends on position. It depends on year and sport. And most importantly, perhaps, depends on risk of additional injury.
I would go to mymosh.com, and I would look up Dr. Bill Pennington and set up an appointment. In your tweet, you said you believe if you have not gotten this looked at, Dr. Pennington will certainly see you next week, early next week, to have you come in and have your son come in, and then he can kind of take a look at it and go from there. In that answer, Dr. Pennington, you talked about the Sully brace. Can you explain that?
Well, there are some braces that you can use. Again, I think probably I won't speak for Brian, but he's probably a lot like me in my practice. That sometimes you have people who want to just try to make it through a season. They maybe aren't dislocating completely. They're subluxing, where they have kind of a stretched out ligament, and you can put them in a brace that limits the motion of the shoulder, so it doesn't get in the position of where they're at the highest risk of dislocation. Now, it's by no means a guarantee, but we can sometimes try to let a patient use those braces to give them a chance of being able to play.
Yeah, so essentially what the Sully brace does, and I know Dr. Pennington and I basically do the same thing with this, because we see a lot of patients back and forth. Essentially what it does is it keeps you from rotating too far away from your body. So for certain types of injury that have an MRI, we know exactly what's wrong. We know what the risk profile is, and they play a position that they can wear this brace. For example, if you're a wide receiver and you have to reach up overhead to grab the ball, you can't wear a Sully brace because you can't put your arm up over your head to catch the ball. So there are certain positions that these braces can help. But as Dr. Pennington said, they're not, first of all, they're not foolproof. And second of all, they're really temporizing things. They're things to get you through. Maybe it's your senior year. It's your last chance to play. And then, you know, you may take that chance. But first things first, we always stress this on this show, get a diagnosis.
Right. And again, Ann, go to mymosh.com. Dr. Bill Pennington is your best bet. You can tweet us throughout the show, hashtag SportsMedRadio, and we will try to get your questions. Have Dr. Brian McCarty, Dr. Bill Pennington, our special guest, answer those questions. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling.
Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, Dr. Brian McCarty. Our special in-studio guest is Dr. William Pennington. Go to mymosh.com, check out any information on him. Also joining us in studio, Jamie Sumley. She's the Director of Digital Marketing for Wheaton Franciscan Healthcare, setting us up to be able to answer questions to hashtag SportsMedRadio. And we will try to get to your questions. Guys, this segment, we're going to talk about labrum. And if we could just start with the definition, Dr. Pennington, of what is a labrum?
Well, the labrum is a rim of cartilage that lines the cup of the shoulder. As you know, the shoulder joint is a ball and socket joint, but it's not a very deep joint. When we talk to patients, we always use the analogy that the shoulder is like a golf ball sitting on top of a tee. And so you know how it is. If you go up to a golf ball sitting on a tee, you could flick it with your finger and that ball would just fall off of the tee, as Brian's demonstrating with an apple on his hand right now. Good analogy. So that's why you can move your shoulder around so much. It has such a great range of motion, but it makes the joint inherently unstable. So the labrum is a rim of cartilage. It goes around the cup that, very simplistically, it almost makes it deeper. It almost acts like a suction cup to hold the ball in place. And it's where all of the ligaments attach that go from the arm bone, the humerus, to the cup of the shoulder. The ligaments attach to the cup through the labrum that holds the shoulder in place through its range of motion.
You know, I don't think years ago we heard a lot about the labrum, and it seems like we hear more and more about it nowadays, and I'm wondering if tears are more common or if you guys are just getting better at
There are two really huge issues that made a big difference in terms of diagnosing these problems, not only in the shoulder, but also in the hip. You hear about it a lot. And one of them is MRI, right? So MRI is able to show this structure much more clearly. A so-called MRI arthrogram, often where they put fluid in the joint, can distend it. You can see the labrum pulled away from the bone, and it's very helpful for diagnosis. And then the second part that, you know, Dr. Pennington and I have been sort of doing for a long time, but was new when we first came in, was arthroscopy of the shoulder, where you look in there with a scope and you can repair these things without big incisions. And that's been an enormous change. This suction cup thing about the labrum is really important. And that's actually one of its major functions. It literally helps to suck the ball right into the socket. And once that's torn away, Dr. Pennington, you have problems, right? Because it no longer sits in the middle.
And through the range of motion, the ball doesn't stay centered in the cup anymore, and you have problems with pain and then sometimes even frank instability with the shoulder popping out. I'd like to also add to what Brian said about your question with how many labral tears you're hearing about. I think the three of us are relatively the same age, and probably since we're sitting here, we were athletes ourselves. And I will tell you that the level of participation that the kids nowadays are doing compared to what we did. I'm a huge baseball guy, but kids are playing way too much baseball. Kids are our athletes are getting so big. They're throwing too much. They're really, most of our labral tears I see aren't traumatic. They're overuse, and it's because of that. And we're trying to get the word out there that you have to do other things. You have to cross train.
Is it baseball? When the guys you see or the women you see, baseball, swimming.
We see it in everything, don't we? We see it in gymnastics, you see it in swimming, you see it in baseball, you see it in football. Football ones are more traumatic, I'd say, on average. Right. Weightlifters, I see tons of weightlifters with labral tears, usually over the course of time. So a lot of sports involved.
How are they fixed? Is it through surgery? Is it rest?
It depends on the degree of tear, and it depends on the age of the patient. I mean, these tears do not heal. biologically, there's really not a way to get them to heal except for in very, very young athletes. And we're talking pediatric athletes. Those can sometimes heal, and we certainly try to get those too. But the older you get, when I say older, when you start getting in the 16, 17-year-old range, those tears won't heal. If it's a large tear, your ability to rehab that is and your level of activity really isn't that great for non-operative treatment. A lot of times we have to do what Brian talked about in arthroscopy. We put a TV camera into the shoulder joint, and we can actually use stitches and sometimes what are called anchors to sew it back down to the cup of the shoulder.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Mike. You know, Bill Pennington and I came into practice at a very similar time. When we started our training, almost all of these repairs were done open, and they were done through big incisions, and there were muscles moved out of the way, and it was this big ordeal. And during our training, things segued into arthroscopic treatments. And what's so cool about that is that not only can it be done through little small incisions, but it's actually much more anatomical. I mean, we can really put the labrum back exactly where it was. And that's one of the reasons that these are repaired so much more frequently, because the recovery is much more reproducible, and we can really restore the anatomy, which is, you know, we talk about this all the time, right? And so Dr. Pennington did, you know, his fellowship with one of the foremost leaders in this front, in this area, and came back, brought a lot of this back. And I know that, you know, I sort of came in and we were doing the same sorts of things. But it's so rewarding for us to see patients get back to full activity from this.
Right. People, as Brian touched on, people always think arthroscopic is great because it's through these small incisions. The key is back in the day when, think of the shoulder as being a round structure. If somebody pops their shoulder joint out the front of the shoulder, they definitely injure something in the back as well. And so when we do these procedures arthroscopically now, we have the ability that we can see everything front to back and repair both areas, where when these were done open, you could only see, if you opened up the shoulder anteriorly, there was no way you could even see in back, much less fix what was in back. So it's really, as Brian said, a much more anatomic repair of the problem.
How long back, I guess back in the day is the only way I can say it, how long would you stay overnight in hospital? You just stay a couple of days in the hospital? And the reason I'm asking, when I was in high school, which is a zillion years ago, but I just had what would be a real minor surgery. I had a cartilage, it was called a joint mouse, that would float around. And I was in the hospital for like 3 days. And I think now I'd probably be in and out in about an hour, I would think. So I'm wondering with the labrum tear, if you have the surgery, what it used to be like as far as your stay and what it's like now?
You're absolutely right. I mean, Brian will also tell you that, you know, we take care of a lot of people who perhaps had it done the old-fashioned way, had it done open, and then we revise them arthroscopically if they re-injure their shoulder. Real common thing for that to happen. And the people always comment, boy, this is so much different than when I had it done open. You know, when I was in high school, I had to stay overnight or even sometimes 2-3 days. And arthroscopic, yeah, you go home about 4 hours later.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a huge difference, and frankly, it's way better than the old days. And that's why, you know, I think you hear more about it, because in the old days, it used to be, unless you were, you know, a big-time athlete or something, you just left it alone and just stopped doing whatever you were doing. And now we can repair these, get people back to full function. It's an incredibly rewarding change in practice.
Hey, guys, let's get you a break. After the break, we'll continue to talk about shoulder instability with Dr. Bill Pennington. You know, you're listening, you might think you know it all at this point, but we're just kind of getting started, right? We got some pretty interesting stuff. I would stick around. A lot of cool things, Dr. Pennington, we're going to talk about. Again, you can tweet us questions, and we'll try to get to them. Hashtag SportsMedRadio. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
News with the young guns. We're the ones that they told you to run from.
Yeah, the player's gonna play and a hater's gonna hate. And a
regulator's ball. That's Eric Church, The Outsiders, brought to you by our special guest, Dr. Bill Pennington. Check his information. Go to mymosh.com. And you can phone numbers, addresses, or you can tweet us and we'll get it to you. Tweet us at SportsMedRadio. And we'll get you any information that you need on Dr. Bill Pennington.
We are all over the Twitterverse.
Jamie's smiling over there. Jamie, thanks for coming in and kind of going through this, because I was a little bit nervous about it, and you've been marvelous teaching us this.
Oh, you're doing a great job. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Tape that, friend. Tape that part of
it. Yeah, you know, we've been called twits, but we've never been on Twitter before.
All I know is she said, don't say this and please don't say, and now I knew enough. But again, you can tweet us questions, hashtag SportsMedRadio. And before we get out of here, and we've got some questions, obviously, for Dr. Pennington, but before we do, I want to thank you guys. Milwaukee Neri is another client of mine. And thanks for moving. Starting early November, we're going to actually have this show on from 9 to 10. And Milwaukee Neri is going to be from 8 to 9. And it's perfect for them. It is, because guys get up early and they're going to go off and do their home improvement work. And for you guys to be willing to move to 9 to 10 just really helps us. And thank you for doing that.
You know what? I think it's a good thing for both of us, really. But it's great that we were able to do that. This way we can be available and segue right into the coach's show. So
right.
Those of you who are up listening, and we appreciate all your support, by the way. I keep hearing more and more people commenting and giving us feedback so we can continue to improve our show. But we want to be able to segue right into the coach's show to help them to talk about injuries that they've seen.
Right. And, so, and I just
it'll work out very
I know
nicely.
That you guys are very generous, and I appreciate you doing that. And Milwaukee Neri, starting early November, will be 8 to 9. We're just going to switch
the
shows.
Yeah, we're excited about that. So it'll be 9 o'clock.
9 to 10.
Get another hour of sleep.
Yeah. I won't, because I'll be talking with my Milwaukee Neri boys. They're the best, man. Let's talk, if we can, Dr. Pennington. I've heard the term loose shoulders, and I'm wondering if you can give me a definition of that.
Well, you just gave it. A loose shoulder is kind of a shoulder that is what we call hypermobile, or moves around too much. Generally, it's because the shoulder capsule is stretched out. Some people are genetically predisposed to it. I think if you're talking athletically, the people I see most commonly with this problem are swimmers. And it's not necessarily a labral tear. In fact, they usually don't have labral tears, and there are people that come in who just come, young athletes, who will say they sometimes feel their shoulders kind of move too much out of joint where they feel it's sublux. They complain of a lot of pain, and they complain about pain that's associated when it's a swimmer. They'll start their workout and they'll start swimming, and they'll fatigue and they'll complain of pain, and then they'll have weakness. And these are patients, a lot of times we can try rehabilitation on them, and we really try to rehab them over and over. We'll image them. We'll see that maybe their capsules are a little stretched out. And we'll try to get what we call the dynamic stabilizers, the muscles around the shoulder, the rotator cuff muscles that are there to help keep the ball centered in the joint strong to help these people. But ultimately, if it doesn't work, sometimes we have to do one of those arthroscopic operations where we actually do tighten the shoulder up a little bit to take that increased motion that they have from stretching their shoulder away.
Yeah, these patients pose a really interesting challenge for us. Because a lot of them depend on this extra range of motion for their performance. You know, if you see butterfly swimmers and you see what they do, you know, they have this sort of hypermobility. So what we focus on, like as Dr. Pennington said, is the rotator cuff and the stabilizers around the shoulder, and then the shoulder blade stabilizers. You know, 18 muscles attached to your shoulder blade. That's a lot of muscles. And that shoulder blade is, in fact, the socket. So if they can control that better, they can control the shoulder better. So rehab, obviously, is the primary thing. And then when Dr. Pennington or I stabilize these, it's always you tighten them up a little bit, and then you have to stretch them back out. And it's a very tight balance, making sure you're balancing just perfectly to let them get back to their full performance, but keeping them tight enough that they don't slip out.
Brian referred to the fact I did a fellowship, and my mentor, the guy who taught me everything I know about shoulders, he would always go to these national conferences talking about these things, and he would say, we do the three little bear surgery. They start out too loose, we make them a little bit too tight, and then they rehab to be just right.
That's how it goes. Yep.
Do you know, when you look at swimmers and how flexible they are, especially in their shoulders, and when you talk about people that do the butterfly, can you become more flexible with that? Do you know what I'm asking? It's not something that you're born with, but is there a way to improve that part?
Mike, we're going to need about 4 more hours of show if you want to talk about what repetitive athletics do to the shoulder. And very simply, yes, you can stretch out your capsule, but there are other things. You actually, at a very young age, if you throw too much or if you swim, you can actually change the way your shoulder blade is shaped, and you can increase motion that way through bony changes.
Wow.
So, again, it's a long topic, but very generally speaking, that's the case, yes.
I think we just found a topic for another show.
Yeah,
another chance to bring Dr. Pennington back and discuss that, because that's a great question. It's a really interesting question, I think, for people.
You know, because as a coach, you're always thinking, okay, if I could just have this player be able to do this a little bit better, whether you know they're slow foot, or can we make them more flexible? Can we make their hips a little bit more? You know, my son Matthew, they always said, you're so tight, you're not flexible enough, and I didn't know if there's a way to improve that part of him through core, you know, strength training. But when you talk about the labor and you talk about that type of motion, it always interests me if that swimmer has born that way or they became that way.
A little of both. You're usually good at it because you're a little flexible, and that encourages you to do more of it, and then you get even more flexible. What you don't want is, you don't want it to be pathologically so, right? You don't want to be doing damage to your joint because of that.
Unless you're a guy like Randy Johnson or something like that, and you see the pictures of his arm almost pointing upside down when he's pitching.
Right.
And I always tell my patients, those are the freaks. The guys who are able to survive that, make it in the major leagues, they're not human.
Hey, guys, go ahead.
So, well, next week, you know, we're going to be talking about neck injuries, and it's going to be very interesting. We'll have some celebrity special guests in to talk about the process of how to recover from such things, and it should be very interesting. Dr. Clay Frank will be in talking with us next week.
Hey, Jamie, people can tweet us all week if they want. Again, we're going to be talking about neck injuries, and if they tweet us at hashtag SportsMedRadio, we can get some of those questions answered.
Yep, that would be great.
Jamie, Dr. Pennington, thank you so much for joining us this week. It was awesome.
Jamie, thank you as
Jamie,
well.
Thank you.
You're the best. Thanks for getting us hooked up on Twitter, and feel free to join us on the Twitterverse.
I'm feeling pretty good about this, Dr. McCarty. How about you?
Oh, definitely.
Thanks. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. This has been the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.